In the words of Winston Churchill, democracy is the worst form of government, except all the others that have been tried. That implies, of course, that democracy is just one thing, when its history indicates that it has been many things, from a group of well-off men in Athens to the parliamentary and congressional systems of today. And some historians paint democracy as an ever-expanding, almost inevitable force, while others see it as more fragile and difficult to maintain. The Australian-born John Keane, who's Professor of Politics at the University of Westminster in London, has written a 950-page book surveying the history and called it The Life and Death of Democracy. He also describes what he thinks is a new development following representative democracy, which he thinks is making significant changes. Professor Keane calls it monitory democracy.
Don't mistake the word for monitory. Monitory democracy. Well, the kind of democracy that developed after 1945, when there were only 12 democracies left on the face of the earth. The kind of democracy that developed is not to be described as liberal democracy or a continuation of what went on before. Representative democracy was typically called. What's new is that elections continue to be important. Democracy means nothing less than fair, free, clean elections. But democracy is coming to mean, and we are only at the beginning of this process, much more than that. It means the development, the nurturing of power scrutinizing, power monitoring bodies that are extra parliamentary. India is a cutting edge example of India. Has invented a whole series of institutions and processes, institutions like the panchayat system, local government, the compulsory representation of women, lok adalats, these local courts, railway courts in Mumbai, fiercely contested student elections. So the political geography of democracy, as I see it, is changing towards a kind of rough and tumble democracy where there is a permanent scrutinizing of not only governmental but non-governmental power. And monitory democracy is different because for the first time in the history of democracy, these monitoring mechanisms are stretching across borders. Best case in point is the European Parliament and the attempt to develop a process of scrutinizing power across borders within the European Union. Monitory democracy, this permanent keeping of governments on their toes through not only elections, but also extra-parliamentary scrutiny.
After 1989, after the fall of the Soviet Union, there was, in some intellectual circles, almost a sense of complacency that not only was it the fall of the Soviet Union, but it was the end of history and the triumph of liberal democracy. Is your book, to some degree, an answer to that?
It's a strong attack on that Francis Fukuyama 1989 idea, which, as you know and listeners know, just captured the moment of those velvet revolutions in the summer and autumn of 1989 by saying that this represented proof of the triumph of the idea of liberal democracy that is traceable back to the American founding fathers. This book, The Life and Death of Democracy, argues in two ways against that view. It says that actually this is not a continuation of pre-1989 democracy at all. There is some kind of rupture, some kind of transformation that's going on. Monitory democracy, that's different. And secondly, Fukuyama has no understanding, and today still has no understanding, of what could be called the indigenization of democracy. I mean, if you go to India, you see that the key question is not only what democracy has done to India, but what India has done to democracy. It has given it colour, life, but it's also changed the meaning of democracy. It is an experiment, sticking with the Indian case, completely absent in Fukuyama's idea of the end of history. India is a case where it shows that you can democratize in a context where the vast majority of the population has no reading or writing skills, where there are multiple faiths, multiple identities, multiple languages. One of the basic ideas of the book is that the center of gravity of democracy is now in the Asia and Pacific region. This is where its future will be decided.
So finally then, and this is obviously in our region an extraordinarily important question, which is more likely to succeed, the Indian model, which you've been praising, or the Chinese model, where they try to have economic freedom, but no political freedom, no democracy.
Well, if I was Professor Marvel, the character in the possibly most famous American movie ever, The Wizard of Oz, I would be able to look in my crystal ball and tell you the outcome. In the book...
You can look backwards, though, and probably...
Yes, in the book, I... Well, one can, and one of the key reasons for putting eyes in the backs of our heads when it comes to democracy is that it can teach us about the novelties of our times and of the things that should not be done. And it's clear, looking at the region, that we have a mixture of systems. There is the most successful breakthrough, the Indian case. I see it as not only the world's largest democracy, that's the convenient cliche, but it is a cutting-edge example of where democracy is going in the 21st century. And we have, on the other hand, we have the Chinese case. The present regime is one which talks the language of democracy. It even issued a white paper quite recently on the subject. But it practices a system of authoritarianism, a growing inequality, and growing military power. And I think the Australian difficulty is somehow to fashion a new foreign policy that can reconcile these irreconcilables. I have no doubt that it must involve a regional settlement. I do not think, contrary probably to the present government, that China is the key player in this relationship. It will have to include India, because India too is a rising power. And in a way, the analogy is with the European Union. The problem is somehow to fashion, to create, to craft new institutions that can develop a process further in which non-violent reconciliation of differences among these states not only makes democracy possible and secures democracy in India, in Australia, in Japan, probably in Indonesia, in Taiwan, but can also assist, if it's going to happen, the democratization process in China.
Professor John Keane, as I said, Australian-born, living in Britain, but returning to Australia next year as Professor of Politics at the University of Sydney. Now, you can hear more of that interview, a long, wide-ranging interview with John Keane, at our website a little later this evening, and he'll be speaking at a public forum at the New South Wales Parliament tomorrow night.